Welcome to the Successfully Unemployed Show. My name is Dustin Heiner, and I'm here to help you learn how to quit that J-O-B, that just over broke job, by investing, by having a side hustle, starting a business, or even creating a fantastic website that makes you a lot of money. Today, I am bringing on an expert who has done just that. He quit his job working at a psychiatric ward to build his business, his online website that now serves a lot of people and makes him a lot of money so he can be successfully unemployed. All right, let's start the show.
Welcome to the Successfully Unemployed Show, the place where ordinary people become extraordinary by finding the path to financial freedom through entrepreneurship, side hustles, and passive income. We've already blazed the path, showing you how to retire early and have financial independence so you will never work for someone else again. And now, here's your host, Dustin Heiner.
Hey, what's up, guys? Yes, you heard me right. The expert that I'm bringing on today actually was working at an insane asylum, and after that, he was able to quit his job because he built a fantastic online business. Now, this business is not like a coaching site like I do. No, he has a site that is actually just giving out free information. Think of like Yahoo or something like that that has a bunch of articles, or Forbes or something like that. He puts out loads and loads of articles, and people come to a site and he gets ad revenue, sponsorships, affiliates, all that sort of stuff to provide for himself and his family. And he's going to walk us through how he did it so that you can do the exact same thing. And also, I want to give you my real estate investing course absolutely for free. Text the word rental, R-E-N-T-A-L to 33777. Rental to 33777. I'll give you my real estate investing course absolutely for free, showing you how to find an area of the country to invest, how to build the business first, to make sure you're making money without losing money, at the same time making an automatic business so you can scale the business so you can quit your job as well. Text the word rental to 33777. All right, let's jump into today's show where we have my expert who's going to show us how to create a fantastic website that makes us a lot of money like his does. And I'm bringing on my fantastic expert, Jeff Proctor, to the show. All right, let's get into it.
Jeff, thank you so much for being here on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Jeff, after seeing everything that you've done, and I also want to talk about the psychiatric ward that you had to go back to work afterwards, because as entrepreneurs, we're always trying to figure out a way to be on our own. Well, work on our own, but then sometimes it doesn't work out that well, but we'll get that to that in a second. Mm-hmm. And so how do you make money to provide for your family without having that J-O-B, that just over broke job?
Yeah. So I run dollarsprout.com, which is a website, like you said, that helps people with managing their money. And my background was actually, I used to work at a wealth management firm, helping people invest their money, like individual clients. And now I do something sort of similar to that, but it's just all done on a website. And I just write content, like basically blog content. And the way that we make money is through advertising. So primarily what we do is what's called affiliate marketing. So like, let's say someone is reading an article about how to save more money. And let's say we're listing out a bunch of tips for how to save money. And hey, we recommend like, hey, Ally Bank is paying 1.8% interest rate. Like, if you sign up here, get an account, you're getting great interest rate, you know, help you save, that sort of thing. And if someone is reading our article and signs up for something like that, we would get a commission from Ally Bank or whoever we're talking about. So on our site right now, we have about 400 articles on our site that, you know, some of them have these advertisements, some of them don't. But kind of from the whole, from, you know, building up our audience, having them come to the site, learn, you know, everything there is to know, or everything we've written about money, which is not everything there is to know, but you know, we're working on it. through that, you know, people like come in, sign up, you know, complete offers, and then we slowly built up an income from there. So as it stands today, Dollar Sprout, including me and my co-founder Ben Huber, we have 5 full-time employees and probably about a half dozen or so contractors that help us out with creating that content.
My goodness, that sounds like a fantastic business model. And so you already have, well, you do have 5 employees and contractors. That's mm-hmm. just, it seems like for having a website that you would mm-hmm. actually, it's like people think, why would you need having employees. It's just a website, but you have 400 articles. You have a lot of affiliates you got to work with. We'll get into that. Now, I want to talk about before DollarSprout.com, what were you doing? Like, what kind of job did you have then? What was the process to actually quitting that job to be being full-time with DollarSprout.com?
Yeah, so I graduated from Virginia Tech in 2013. Took me 5 years to get a four-year degree, but we'll save that for another day, that story. So I graduated with a degree in biochemistry from Virginia Tech. I had a, now that part sounds impressive until I say I had, I think like a 2.6 or 2.7 GPA and couldn't get a job.
All of us entrepreneurs definitely get low grades. Yes. So I'm right there with you, Jeff.
I like the med school dreams were never even a remote possibility for me, but I stuck with that degree program for whatever reason, but I was always interested in finance. And, you know, as I came up towards graduating, I needed to get a job and I applied to all sorts of like investment banks, wealth management places. I mean, just everywhere I could think of that like might accept me, and got rejected from everywhere. Like, I don't know exactly how many applications I sent in, but like I had zero success. And then I finally got a hit back from a local wealth management firm in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is where I went to school. And I got an internship for $8 an hour. Now, keep in mind, I was fully graduated at that point. I was done with school, had a degree, making $8 an hour, no benefits, no nothing. I was basically, you know, answering phones, you know, filling out paperwork, checking the mail, like intern stuff. And, you know, through, I stuck with that job for, I think, 2.5 years. I went from $8 an hour, then made $10 an hour. After a year there, I made $12 an hour. In about a year and a half, they gave me benefits and $16 an hour. And by the time I left, I had just got a raise up to $40,000 a year, but I had asked for a raise up to $60,000 because, you know, like you said in the intro, you know, a boss will pay you just enough to keep you around, but not enough to, you know, really dip into their profit margins. And, you know, through my experience in working there, you know, I'd got my securities license, my Series 7 and all that stuff, and was taking on more responsibility, but my, you know, pay was still pretty low. So eventually, you know, I decided like, you know what, screw this. I want to try and do this on my own. And so when I finally left, it was, I think, August of 2015. I was 25 years old at the time. Had no idea what I was in for. But yeah, that's basically, you know, that's what led up to me, you know, first getting into what would become Dollar Sprout.
You saved up money and you saved up almost a year's worth of expenses, which is super impressive. Most people can't even save like a half a month of expenses. So that is very impressive. And then with that money that you saved up, how long did it take before you actually burned through that?
Yeah. So now, keep in mind, I was still kind of living like a college lifestyle, like a broke college kid. So like a year of expenses for me was, you know, quite a bit less than, you know, a father of three and like a family and all that. So I'd saved, I think it was about $21,000 or $22,000, which at my salary level was a lot of saving. And I, before I quit my job, I decided about a year before I left that I wanted to leave and do my own thing. I was still like applying for other jobs and just seeing what was out there, but I knew that I was, you know, planning for my exit about a year in advance. And then, yeah, like I saved what I thought was a year of expenses and then left my job. And the funny thing is, like, when you're planning for your exit, you think that you're just going to spend the bare minimum on everything. And like, that's just not how life works. So like I ended up blowing through my year of savings in about 9 months, which honestly, like that's not like totally unreasonable. Even if I would have made it a year, I still would have blown through it. Like our business at that point wasn't making enough money to support either of us. So I still had to go back and eventually get a job again and try again.
And what was that job? I gotta hear that story.
Yeah. So the thing about working in the finance industry is there's a lot of rules about like conflict of interest stuff. So I didn't want to give up on Dollar Sprout. So I, you know, you can't just go back to a job, you know, doing what I was doing before and then say like, hey, I've got this other business on the side that's like kind of doing sort of the same thing. Not really, like, I just didn't want to deal with all of that headache of, you know, having conflict of interest issues. And Ben, my business partner, Ben, he is actually a registered nurse at a local hospital, and like an actual, like, legit job. He was a registered nurse. And then he said, like, hey, you could work at this hospital as an aide. You know, it's not great money. It's like $11 an hour. But you know, that's something. And you can, like, I mean, it was a somewhat urgent situation. Like, I needed money, like, now. So I eventually found an opening, and it was at the inpatient psychiatric unit. So I went from, you know, managing money for millionaires to, you know, trying entrepreneurship for 9 months, failing. And then now I'm, you know, serving breakfast trays and, you know, being on, like, suicide watch for, like, depressed patients and, you know, all of that sort of, like, bathing people. It was quite the transformation in just, you know, a short amount of time. So I got that job at the psych ward, and, you know, still kept working on Dollar Sprout, like, before and after work, and a lot of times during work too. That's just how it is. it wasn't the hardest job in the world. It was just a lot of hours. But, you know, when things were calm, I had time to, you know, sneak into WordPress and write some articles or whatever.
And so from there, you were building Dollar Sprout, it sounds like, mm-hmm. at the same time. So you started it, quit mm-hmm. your job, 9 months of time off, and then I got to get another job, got to work at yep. a psych ward. That just sounds it, for me, and I'm not a hospital type of guy. I'm not that type mm-hmm. of person. That'd be just be really rough for me. And then you build up the business even more, and you get to Dollar Sprout. And then DollarSprout.com is taking off now, and then you can quit mm-hmm. your job. Was it easy? Obviously, you're working at a psychiatric ward, and making very little money. Was it easy for you to say, you know what, I have enough money coming in from DollarSprout.com to make that leap to quitting there again?
Yeah. So it's funny, if you look at, you know, how I quit my first job, you know, I quit with zero income coming in from the business, just like, we're starting from scratch. Like, let's do it day one. Let's start. And by the time I had left at the psych ward, you know, we were probably making enough to, like, pay me and Ben full-time salaries without having jobs. But we kind of, like, learned our lesson from the first go around. Like, you know, I didn't want to quit when we were making, like, $500 a month and, like, feel that stress again. Because, you know, also for that first year that I was unemployed, I, you know, in an effort to cut costs, like, I didn't have health insurance. And of course, that was the year I was, like, more sick than I've ever been in my life, just because there's all that stress. Yep. And then you have the stress and you get sick and then you can't go to the doctor and you get, like, more stress and more sick, and don't recommend doing that. But yeah, so by the time, so I kind of slowly, like, phased out, and the hospital job was great. Like, it was flexible, and, like, you know, I could go from full time to part time to, like, very part time, and then eventually just be done. So I was there for, I think, about 10 months or so, give or take, you know, a couple months. And I learned a lot.
Yeah. Your experience going through that. And sorry, when did you start Dollar Sprout? You said it, but what year was it?
2015. August 2015 is when we had an older domain back then. But then we eventually rebranded in 2017 to Dollar Sprout.
Oh, got it. So you moved all that content over, mm-hmm, forward links, mm-hmm, and everything. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So let's say that I wanted to start something like Dollar Sprout, where I'm helping people, and mm-hmm, I want to use affiliates as well as mm-hmm ads. I just want to, you know, I don't want to really want to sell a course. I don't want mm-hmm to be the face of it. And tell me the difference, in your opinion, between having something where it's a personality driven website as opposed to being, like, just content driven, because, you know, when you think about a couple of different sites, those are the two main ways that people create a website to then make money online. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Ben and I have, like, you know, dabbled in, like, creating courses before, and, like, we've spent months working on one, and then we just never finish it. We just, like, scrap it, because we realize, like, we don't like working on this. Like, we, like, for some reason, like, both of our brains are kind of wired in a similar way. Like, we're both, you know, fairly introverted. So, you know, we don't necessarily want to become, like, personal brands or, you know, put our face everywhere. And we really like, at least I really like, the idea of, like, you know, creating, like, a single piece of content, make it as good as you possibly can, and then find a way to market it and, you know, get, if there's affiliates in there, great. If there's not, that's okay too. Get people, get an audience to that piece of content. So it's almost like, you know, right now we have 400 articles on our site, which, you know, some sites have, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of articles. But, you know, for us, it's like each article is like a mini project that you work on. And I think it's just kind of more, this is more how our brains are wired. I just don't particularly like spending, you know, months on end creating a course and then doing the whole email marketing. And I mean, it's extremely effective for a lot of people. It's just, you know, not what we kind of found our strengths in.
Yeah. So it fits your personalities, but at the same time, mm-hmm. you're able, in my opinion, also, if you have a site that can reach a lot more people, help a lot more people, I wouldn't say a lot more. It just seems like a personality driven website can only, I wouldn't say only go so, it goes so far, but then it starts almost hitting a cap. Whereas if you have mm-hmm. a, almost like a news site or just a content site that people keep going to. Now, if I were to start, I wanted to start, do I have to find a fantastic name like dollarsprout.com and pay a couple $1,000 for? Or can I just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to put, I don't know, makemoney.com or whatever it can be. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. about the domain and how do we get started?
Yeah, I think, you know, for when Ben and I got dollarsprout.com, the domain name, we got it for, I think it was like $1,600 from one of those domain brokers, which, you know,
what was the time, domain name before that?
Is vtxcapital.com. We initially wanted to have like a investment research, like subscription company. And that was, you know, part of the reason why our first year was not very successful, because it was too, like the product creation and the marketing was like just too much for us to handle. And we didn't realize we were going up against like, you know, the Morning Stars and, you know, Kiplingers and all those people like of the world. So we were just in way over our heads, and blogging was a little bit easier to get started in.
And so you from
took us a year to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, you didn't take too much longer, which is great. Some people take years and then realize, oh man, I'm in the wrong space. So you took VTX Capital, got dollarsprout.com. What are your thoughts about the domain name? Obviously VTX Capital, to me, it sounds like a hedge fund or, you know, what are your thoughts about the domain name?
Sadly, that was our goal.
Oh, okay. There we go.
I mean, as our identity kind of shifted towards the blog side of things, rather than, you know, like a subscription, like heavy research, like the technical side of things, like as we shifted to more of a blog model of doing things, we realized like, hey, our domain name makes no sense right now. We've got to change it. So we eventually found dollarsprout.com. And, you know, that at the time, you know, we paid $1,600 for it. You know, looking back, I think it was a great investment because, I mean, it's easy to remember. It's short. It has like, it's you kind of associated with money. It's, you know, the hard thing about finding a good domain name is a lot of them are taken, or if you find a good one, it's like really, really long, like how to make money and manage your money from home.com or whatever. It's like, no one's going to ever remember that or type it in. So, you know, it's not saying that everybody, like you have to like, you know, go all out and get, you know, one of these really expensive domains. And surely, I mean, with dollarsprout.com, I mean, I think we found a fairly good deal because there's a lot of these domains out there that are like, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $50,000. And, you know, for $1,600, it's, you know, for us, it was worth it. I think if you're looking to start, you know, on a smaller budget, I don't think there's anything wrong with just getting any name that you like and it's good enough. Yeah, so if you're just starting out and, you know, you don't want to go all out on a domain name, I think it's fine to get something, just anything, and just get started. I think the important thing is to get something up and online and start learning the skill set. Because if you take forever to find the perfect domain name, that's time that you're not spending, you know, building up your skills that you're going to need to create good content and market it out to people. And that's more important than your domain name. So if you can get just anything that is, you know, remotely reasonable, get it and start working on it. And then, you know, if you get a year or two down the road and you decide like you really want to do this, and, you know, if you find a domain name that you like that maybe is, you know, a couple $1,000 or $1,000 or $500 or whatever, you know, then you can make the leap and it's not it's not impossible to do that.
And you you could make up something on your own and have it work out pretty well. So for my site, for successfullyunemployed.co, somebody already bought the .com and he's literally not using it. I called him up. I was actually talking to him. He said, well, I'll use them Sunday. I'm like, well, you know, how much can I give it? You know, I'll give you $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. I kept raising it up because I have money. And I was like, I want the domain. He just says, I'm literally not going to sell. I'm like, oh, well, I'm just going to go with successfullyunemployed.co. I just need to make sure I don't ever say .com. But what's great is the Google and search engines are going to be the ones that do it. I find that, you know, help people find you. If you can create a shorter domain, that's a little bit easier rather than like your email, like Dustin@successfullyunemployed.co. Like that's just a lot of words, dollar sprouts, you know, a little shorter in certain letters. So if we get a domain name, or do you suggest WordPress? And I do want to talk, really dig into the content because you said a couple times and we need to get better at our skill at creating content, but get a hosting because we need, is WordPress a great way to go? Because I like WordPress. What are your thoughts?
So honestly, between me and my co-founder, Ben is the technical guy and he knows way more about this stuff than I do, but WordPress is all that we've used, all we've ever really used. So it's great. I know that it's like used by the vast majority of people who do blogging. I think if you're, you know, I've heard of like Squarespace and all those sites for like, you know, if you run a restaurant and just want to put up a site for your restaurant or something that looks good, but you know, it's not necessarily aimed at content distribution, but is more just like a face for your business. Then that, you know, is probably a better suit for that. But again, you know, I'm not necessarily like an expert on that. WordPress has been great for us. And I think our first hosting that we used was GoDaddy. And I don't think it was particularly, you know, good or bad. I think it was just the one that we just happened to pick first. And I think for, you know, most new bloggers, you know, the entry level like hosting programs are, you know, pretty much the same. I mean, give or take a few like features here and there, or like a couple dollars a month, but you know, you can't really go like extremely wrong. Like Bluehost, HostGator, SiteGround, they're all good for beginners.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And what's great is you can create a business, start it, even if you didn't spend $1,600 to buy a domain name, you could pay $8 or $10. I use Namecheap.com for mine. And I also use SiteGround for my my site as well. And so Namecheap is like $10 a year for your domain. And then SiteGround is like $4 a month for your domain. And you can create a business that is as fantastic as Dollar Sprout, making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So let's dive into, okay, it's not that hard to get the domain, build up a WordPress site. You can even pay somebody to design the site. But what you're telling me is the number one thing is the content on the site. You said number of times you have 400 articles, which is great, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Other sites have 4,000 or 5,000 or even more. I've talked to people that they produce one piece of content every single day, but they have other people writing. Obviously, you know, they have money coming in so they can do that.
Yeah.
So talk to us about content. What do you mean by writing good content?
Yeah. So it took us, you know, a while, and we're still like in the process of, you know, getting better at making content. I think every blogger, if you were to, you know, look back at a post that they created 6 months or a year ago, you would cringe. You'd be like, that's so bad compared to where I'm at now. So, you know, of our 400 articles on our site, I would say, you know, 50 of them or so are like ones we're really proud of and we think we did a great job. And then we're trying to, you know, bring the other ones up to that level now. But yeah, for, you know, in terms of making good content, you know, for at least for a site like ours, where we are not a personal brand, we're not, you know, huge on, you know, sharing our personal stories and that sort of thing. You know, our number one goal is to help a reader, you know, solve a problem or like learn something about finance. So, you know, the way that we do that is, you know, we try to balance between having our content be as comprehensive as possible, but also still digestible. So, you know, a lot of our posts are, you know, several thousand words, you know, like at least like 2000 words are probably most of our posts, which, you know, if you're reading it, I mean, it takes a good, you know, 10 minutes to read through. And creating that type of content takes, you know, a lot of research up front. You know, you want to figure out, you know, how you want to organize it. You can't just, you know, sit at the keyboard and just start typing away until you're like, okay, I think I've said everything. You know, it's helpful to, you know, sit down beforehand, create an outline, think about, like, okay, here's the points I want to cover. You know, if you have an affiliate you want to throw in there, like, okay, here's where I'm going to mention them. It makes sense to mention them here. Like, you know, that sort of thing, to where, like, by the time you're ready to, like, actually create that piece of content, you have, like, a roadmap essentially laid out, and then you just do it. So that's sort of kind of been our approach up to this point.
So do you write as if you're just teaching, or do you put in, like, your own personality? Do you put in personal stories and things like that?
For the most part, we try to limit the amount of, like, personal involvement in it. Maybe, like, in the intro or something, we might, like, share, like, a quick, like, personal bit of, like, but then once we get into, like, the meat of the article, it's fairly, like, expository writing, you know, just explaining the concepts. And, you know, we'll use, or we're trying to get better about, you know, using stories from other people. So if I was writing an article on how to invest, I might, like, you know, try to include a source from Dustin about, like, okay, Dustin, like, had $5,000 to start, and, like, here's what he did, and kind of show. So it's not just, you know, us talking about us, but we're, like, covering what other people are doing. So we're trying to get better about, you know, doing that in more of our content. But, you know, it's something where, like, we didn't used to do that. And now it's, you know, when we see that in other people's articles, it's like, oh, okay, that's really cool. This makes this, like, a better piece of content. So as time goes on, you kind of pick up little bits and pieces here and there of, like, what makes stuff good and what just basically is how to make your content better.
Yeah, I think that's right on. Now, what are your thoughts about how many articles, either a week or per month, or is it more articles the better? And pausing that, or, like, giving that thought of the more articles, because if you don't write good articles, it doesn't matter if you have 100,000 articles out there. If they're not good enough, people want to read. If they click on it and they click right back out, Google's not going to like that. But what are your thoughts about content calendars and creating content wise for your site so that Google starts picking it up and said, hey, this is a good site, let's keep sending people to it?
Yeah. So I think, as actually Ben and I were just talking about this the other day, you know, we were going back through some of our content from, you know, last year, which isn't that far away. I mean, this podcast is recorded in February, and, you know, we realized, like, you know, in some of our articles for a stretch of time, like, our quality kind of suffered. And, you know, even though we only have 400 articles on our site, which in comparison is very few compared to a lot of sites, we thought, or we felt, that we were publishing too fast. So for us, you know, and that was when we were publishing, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. And even still, that was, and that's with, you know, a team of, you know, freelance writers. And it wasn't like Ben and I writing this content. We had people helping us. So for us, you know, now we're slowing down our publishing a lot. We're maybe only doing, you know, 1 to maybe 3 a week. I think for every site, it's a little bit different. I think for our strategy of, you know, trying to create really comprehensive, you know, best content possible on a particular topic, you know, for us, it's important to go slow and do it right, rather than just try to throw as much at Google as possible and, like, just hope that they rank us for whatever. So that's, you know, a lesson that we've learned along the way. You know, when you have your first bit of success in, you know, getting people to your site, like, your natural inclination is like, okay, how do we amplify this? And we tried doing that, and then we kind of got caught in, like, okay, we're going too fast. Let's slow back down and do things at a pace that we're comfortable with and comfortable with the quality that we're putting out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because as you're putting out bad content, Google's going to see, hey, people don't like this, and they're going to stop sending people to that content. Yes. So right now you're 3 to 4 articles a week. Now, you're not writing all those yourself, are you? You're hiring people, and how does that play out?
Yeah, I write almost no content now, and same with Ben. So our full-time employees are actually editors, and all of our content is written by freelance writers. So we've met, you know, a lot of freelance writers through the FinCon community, which is I don't know if your listeners are familiar with that, but it's basically just a huge community of everybody that works in the like financial media industry. So podcasters, writers, YouTubers, all sorts of, you know, that type of work. And, you know, we find people through there and, you know, have them write content for us. We pay them, they write content, everybody's happy. And yeah, that's basically how we've been able to scale to, you know, the output that we're doing now. Cause honestly, I'm not a very fast writer, and neither is Ben. And you know, not even particularly good either. You know, there's some of these freelance writers, like this is what they do. And like, they are really, really good at it. And part of Ben and I's job is like, we want to take their talents in writing and match it up with our skill set of, you know, pairing that up with, you know, good monetization and getting, you know, traffic to it and just overall branding in general. So that's kind of where we're trying to like mold everything together.
And so when you say it sounds like you have contractors that are doing the writing, the freelance writers, but you have five full-time employees. Are they employees, like W-2 employees, or are they also?
Yeah. So yeah, and it's including me and Ben. So I guess three full-time people other than me and Ben. And they're, yeah, W-2 full-time employees. They edit full-time. So they're working with our freelance writers. And also we're working on a big project now of just going back through our old content and trying to bring it up to our current standards. So that is a full-time job to do. Even though it's only a few hundred articles, it, you know, if you do it the right way, it should take a really long time.
I agree.
So that's, yeah, that's all keeping that content, everybody busy.
Yeah, all that content to get it to where people are going to stay on it and read it. Mm-hmm. That's going to take a lot of work to make sure that people are engaged and, mm-hmm. and do that. Now, I am thinking, okay, if I'm starting a website, I got my domain name, I got WordPress going, I'm putting out articles myself, and I'm working my job, I'm just over broke, but I want to start growing. I think, man, I really should hire somebody at least to write. Maybe I can edit because it's easy. I have time at my work. I can look at my phone or whatever. I can edit a little bit, but I really need to have somebody write the articles. Number one, how do we find it? But number two, how much do we pay them?
Yeah. So we've gone through the whole gamut on this. You know, the first freelance writer that I hired, I found on Upwork. I think we were paying them. I mean, it wasn't even on a per word basis. It was like $25 for like a 1500 word article, which if you're familiar with, you know, freelance rates, that's horrible. That's like, you get what you pay for, and we got what we paid for. But you know, the way that we looked at it at the time was like, okay, if someone just sends me something, like, you know, me or Ben can edit it. And then, you know, eventually you slowly move up. So that's where we started, was, you know, finding, you know, someone on Upwork that maybe didn't work in the US and just did, you know, because they're, if you work with some international freelancers, a lot of times the rates are quite a bit cheaper. But again, you know, English may not be their first language. You know, it's, I would say, generally poor quality content. So you start,
and they use wrong idioms, and they just like, that doesn't fit here.
Yes. So yeah, we tried that, because it's when you see that you can get an article for $25 or whatever, it's tempting to try it, and we tried it. So you go from that to then you slowly move up to like, maybe you found someone in the FinCon community that is like just getting started in freelancing, and they don't have a huge resume or portfolio yet, but they're just looking for their first client. And you know, you can maybe get a decent deal on some stuff, and you know,
and
they're learning
how.
I think some of our first few freelancers, this is quite a while ago, so I might remember this wrong, but I would say between like $100 and $150 for like, you know, a 1500 or 2000 word article. So like maybe like 10 cents a word or so, which is still, you know, the lower end of things. And again, this is still like, you know, an entry level, you know, freelancer. And then you move up to like, okay, here, whoops, hit my microphone there. If you move up to, you know, a freelancer that has maybe worked with some of the bigger sites before, and you know, they have like a decent portfolio, and they charge maybe 25 or 30 cents a word, their writing quality is better, they have more connections. And then eventually, you know, now we're trying to, you know, move up to that next level where, you know, this is a writer that's like written for Forbes or like US News and World Report or Bankrate or like these big sites. Like they're like the top tier like freelancers. And, you know, those folks are going to be 40, 50, 60 cents a word, sometimes even higher.
Oh, my goodness. So,
yeah, it gets expensive, but that you move up to that as your revenue grows and your income grows. So you don't have to start at that level. You can definitely make things work with, you know, the cheap Upwork or Fiverr, you know, freelancer. You have to put more work in on editing, but then as you just kind of slowly move up. So there's no real like rush to get to, you know, the top.
So it seems like the starting is just getting content out there, getting used to writing. Obviously we have the domain name, we got the server, we have the hosting, like everything's working. WordPress is going, we're starting to put content out there. We write articles on our own. Then we start scaling, hiring somebody, bringing somebody on. What about affiliates? What about ads? At what point do we do ads? What point do we do? I mean, it seems like affiliates, you could do much sooner than ads. But at the same time, what are your thoughts about how do we now make money from the business?
Yeah. So we used to have ads and affiliates. So for people who don't know, like the display ads are like, you know, if you go to like CNN.com and you see all the little ads everywhere, like in news articles, they're just
everywhere.
You know, they're just random ads for, you know, they're not even really related to what you're looking at half the time. Most of the time, actually, they're for just whatever. And, you know, those you might get a couple cents here and there for clicks. So we used to have those on our site, and, you know, we would make, you know, based off of our traffic, you know, you still make a decent amount of money from them. But we started with affiliates much sooner because, you know, you don't necessarily need like the higher traffic requirements for affiliates. It's more just, you know, if you have a good spot for someone in an article, if you just contact that advertiser and be like, hey, like whether it's via a network or you reach out to them on a contact page on their site or whatever, just say like, hey, like, I want to join your program. Like, how can I get in? Like, usually it's pretty easy. Like, sometimes you'll get rejected, but that's just part of the game. We still get rejected by brands all the time. It's just how it is. And, you know, you start getting some of those placements in there, and then you get, you know, you might start making like $1 or $2 a day. Then it turns into $5 a day, $10 a day. And it, you know, hopefully just keeps kind of growing from there.
So how do we find the right affiliates? Do we just start like type in, if we're going to go after a bank, just type in banks and try to find, is there like a network of affiliates, or how do we do that to make sure we're finding the right ones?
Yeah. So where we started was we joined a handful of what are called like affiliate networks. So like one example would be like CJ.com, which I think stands for commissionjunction.com. But it's just CJ.com. And it's basically just the website you go to, you sign up, make a profile. It's all free. You like set up a profile for your site. So like they know like, okay, like Jeff with dollarsprout.com, he gets this many visitors a month. That's what the site's about. And then there's this whole like network of advertisers that you can promote. So if I were to go, you know, sort by like financial industry, like, you know, and then it shows me all like the relevant advertisers for like, okay, for taxes, there's H&R Block and TurboTax and whatever. And then, you know, banks, or, you know, if you want to promote like Uber or Lyft or whatever. So once you join one of these networks, you have a consolidated place where then you can apply to affiliate programs. And that's typically like the first step is like joining a handful of these networks. There's quite a few of them, and a lot of them have the same advertisers, but you might find like small discrepancies like here and there between networks. Like one might pay, you know, $5 for like a commission, and one might pay $6. So stuff like that, where you just want to like find the best deal. But yeah, that's where we would start, is there. And then if we can't find an advertiser on a network, we would just then reach out. But a lot of times when you're first brainstorming for, you know, affiliates or advertisers to promote, you know, you look at, you know, what, if you're writing from like a storytelling perspective or like from your first person experience, like if you say like, hey, I love using personal capital to track my net worth, like, and you use that personally, then, you know, that would be a great fit to put in your article. And personal capital has an affiliate program on flexoffers.com, for instance, and probably a bunch of other networks too. So start off by using, you know, the companies that you like use and are familiar with. And then, you know, you can eventually branch out and see, you know, what programs are other bloggers in your space promoting, and, you know, what companies are good versus like you know, if there's a company that has an affiliate program, but like that company just, you don't want to promote them, like you don't have to.
You can, and you shouldn't, in my opinion. You absolutely should, because they could turn back on you and like, man, this people, that Dollar Sprout, they sent me over there and they're just not teaching me, or they're not taking care of me as well as I should. So yeah, I would agree that, and I do love having like CJ.com, Impact.com is another one that I use. Yep. I love having all my information in one, so I don't have to continually put in that information. All I got to do is click like apply for an affiliate, and they they look at everything I've already done, and they either say accept or reject. And you can obviously, if you, they reject you, you can find me and reach out again or email them or something like that. But it just creating so many different accounts, like with each and every single affiliate, it makes it, it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time.
It does. I mean, I'm looking at my like toolbar in Chrome right now, and I've like the first 20 are like different networks and stuff. And we're working on consolidating it, but yeah, it, you just got to be at least a little bit organized, keep track of where everything is.
What would you find is one of the better affiliate? Like what companies are good? Is it banks better, insurance companies, H&R Block, like you said? What companies are good?
I think the first thing to look at is not necessarily, you know, which ones are the best to promote, but which ones are the best match for the content that you are writing that resonates the most with your readers. So for instance, like when Ben and I first started, you know, transitioning into like our blogging content, as opposed to our membership, you know, nonsense that we were doing before, you know, we were writing blog content on investing. And then, you know, we would, you know, experiment with, you know, writing an article on, you know, the 10 best ways to make money on the weekend or whatever. And we found that like our audience really loved that stuff a lot more for some reason. So like, okay, like how can we find affiliates that resonate with like this type? Like we can still add investing affiliates, but you know, I'm not going to try to like, you know, relentlessly promote TD Ameritrade if my readers are more interested in, you know, driving for Lyft on the weekends. Like, so you have to match not just, you have to match with what people are like consuming on your site and what they want to do and that fits their interests the most. So, you know, if TD Ameritrade is paying $100 for a new account, but I can't convert any of them, but if, you know, I can get someone to sign up with Instacart and make, you know, $20 a pop or whatever, like it's worth my time more to go after the lower commission, higher volume stuff that actually resonates with someone. So
that's great.
Yeah. And of course these lessons are learned like after trying to promote TD Ameritrade forever. And it's like not working because people on your site are reading the other stuff, or, and that's just like a random example. Like,
yeah,
I just made up names there. Like it's, I don't even know if we're affiliates for TD Ameritrade.
So what was the, at what point did you realize taking off ads was better for your company as opposed to leaving them on?
Yeah. So we kept them on for, I guess we haven't had them for a while now, but we, when we took them off, we were probably giving up probably at least $20,000 a month in revenue, which hurt a lot. But we were
in ads, $20,000.
Yeah. We had quite a bit of traffic, and you know, if you're a site, like, I mean, if you go on like some of these news sites, like they, I mean, they really throttle up the ad frequency where it's just miserable to be on a website without ad blocker on. Like, I know if you go to Forbes, it's like
it's
almost
horrible.
Unreadable.
Yeah, it is.
But they make a lot of money from those ads. So it's, you know, for us, we were looking at, you know, where we wanted to go as a brand. And we were looking at kind of the leaders in our space, and you know, none of them have display ads for now. I'm talking about, you know, like where we aspire to be in, you know, however many number of years, even if we never get there. But if you look at the sites like NerdWallet or Credit Karma or those types of sites, like they, since they are so focused on affiliates, they don't have any display ads. So your user experience, since your ads or affiliates are already within your content, you don't necessarily want to just like layer on display ads on top of that. And then your whole site is just like a spam fest. So for us, we wanted to make the decision to, you know, just get rid of the display ads, you know, just rip the Band-Aid off basically. And, you know, if you don't see the money come in, you just don't like think about like what you just gave up, sort of.
So, Matt, to think to give up $20,000 in ad revenue, that's per month, correct?
Yeah, I would estimate.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would estimate. Yeah, it was at least that at our traffic peak, and you know, obviously traffic ebbs and flows. But if we were to have, you know, ads displaying on all of our articles at like a relatively high frequency, like what you might see on a news website, it would be multiple tens of thousands, I would estimate, that we were giving up.
From pulling that off, did you see an uptick in your affiliates and like basically people staying on your site longer, and did it pay off? Like, did you make up all that money and then some because you took those off?
Yeah. It's very hard to, you know, directly, you know, see the trade-off, because there's a few trade-offs that are being made. Is, you know, the user experience is better just because there's no ads on the site. So, you know, overall, that's going to, you know, slowly improve your brand quality and just your overall branding, which is very hard to quantitate. And then you also have, you know, you're improving your site speed a little bit, because, you know, those ads take, you know, a few seconds to load. And, you know, Google, if they have to choose between a site that takes 1 second to load and a site that takes 6 seconds to load, and everything else being equal, they're going to take the faster site. So, you know, for us, you know, by getting rid of ads, for us, it made sense because it gave us a higher chance of hopefully, you know, ranking our articles higher and getting traffic that way, and then getting people to then, you know, hopefully funnel down into offers that are actually catered to them, rather than just a bunch of display ads. So again, for us, since our content strategy is so focused on affiliate marketing, it made a lot of sense to do that. But if we were like a news website, or if we were sharing a lot of our personal stories or whatever, and you know, a lot of our content wasn't monetized, then that wouldn't make sense, because we would just be, you know, spending money to create content and then get nothing in return, which is not, you know, a viable business strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And it does seem like the way to scale is to get more traffic. Now you have the affiliates in place. You already have the people, the companies that you want to work for or work with, and have them as affiliates. It seems like the way to scale is to get more traffic. Is that correct? And how do you do that?
Yeah. So what we started doing, well, we first started like trying to do like the like Facebook and Twitter and all that. And like, we weren't getting really any traffic. Like, I mean, I think if you try to, like,
you're talking about ads?
No. Well, first we started just like organic. I mean, this was like 5 years ago, so like, it was slightly easier back then, but not much. But yeah, I mean, when we were just like, you know, sharing our articles on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, like, we weren't really getting enough traffic to move the needle at all. Like, maybe like 50 visitors a day or something. And then we kind of got in at the tail end of the like Pinterest rush of like, you know, everyone was getting a ton of traffic on Pinterest. And, you know, Ben and I, as, you know, non Pinterest users in real life, it was like a whole new world when we were like, okay, people actually use this site, and like, how does this work? Like, what is a pin? Like, what do we do? And then, you know, we got a little bit of success with that. And then we like really focused on that a lot for like our main, you know, content distribution strategy. And then, you know, as we started getting income from there, we, you know, realized, you know, like everyone says, you know, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. So we, you know, eventually started to transition our focus into Google and search engine optimization and all of that, which is basically, for those who don't know, it's basically just like a way to create your content in a way that makes it easy for Google and search engines to understand what your content's about, and then, you know, assess the quality and rank it accordingly. So, you know, if someone searches on Google for how to start investing, there's probably like 50 million articles about how to start investing. So, you know, they've got to have some way to rank them. And there's certain strategies that you can use to, you know, increase your odds of ranking higher in Google. And, you know, it's definitely not, you know, it's not a quick return on your time. You know, it may take something 6 months to a year to eventually rank, as you make like little improvements here or there, get it out there, get more readers on it, give Google more data on, you know, how your article is performing and that sort of thing. So, yeah, we started off basically doing Pinterest, and then we transitioned into Google. We still, you know, focus on Pinterest quite a bit. And then we layer on now we're doing, you know, paid Facebook ads to some articles and doing a little bit of Google ads, not a ton. And that's kind of the gist of our, and we also have an email list too. So, but that's so, like comparatively small, like compared to our like traffic.
And the email list, you would just email them like, here's some new con, like a new piece of content we just wrote, and here's, this might help you, and maybe some a little added to what's already on the site. You write the emails that help want, make them want to go back and check out your site. Is that correct?
Exactly. And we also recently have been using our email list to, you know, we're working on, we just started a YouTube channel within the past year, and we're, you know, that is just like starting on any of these other platforms. You know, you're starting from square one, like it takes a long time to get traction. But what we're doing is, you know, we're using our email list to, you know, send people to our channel. So now we're kind of leveraging one asset to build another. So, you know, you take your Pinterest traffic, you get people to sign up for your email list, then you get people to sign up for your YouTube channel. And if you do this for years, like eventually you have something, but you just have to kind of do one thing at a time, or add one new thing at a time, instead of, you know, on day one, you're like, okay, email, YouTube, newsletter, blog, like it's too much. So you got to just take one bit at a time.
That's great, man. It's amazing to hear that you started in 2015, then rebranded in 2017. And now we're in 2020 now, but you have a site that within, let's say you just say 2017 is when you started. Yeah, no, let's take it back. 2015, in 4 to 5 years, you were able to completely not work at JOB anymore, making plenty of money for you and your partner, as well as all the other employees that you have. You're creating a fantastic business and helping people along the way. That's what I find. As I serve and help more people, the better my life gets, not just monetarily, but at the same time, even I just feel better. I'm like, man, look at all these people that are getting, when I help, I have a coaching student that I coach them about investing in real estate. They buy their first property or eventually quit their job because they have enough properties and enough money coming in. I just feel ecstatic. I just am so amazed at that. Now, I guess there's so many things that we can do, but at the same time, there's so many great ways to make money, and dollarsprout.com is a fantastic site that is really, really helping people. Now, I want to jump into the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, this really broad overview. You should be able to answer these questions pretty easily, but some might get you to think a little bit. So the first one, we think about legacy. You know, we don't have to work 40 plus hours a week for a job, but we can hopefully give back. But we think about legacy, and not to be morbid or anything, but if and when you die, because it's a proven fact, 100% of people die, what would you like to have written on your tombstone, talking all about Jeff, and this is what he's done, and this is what you should remember him for?
Man, that's a good question. This is like not rapid fire. This is like deep
dive.
This
is a deep one. So, yes, I should change it to deep questions with Dustin.
I would say, you know, right now I could see it being built a really big business so then he could do good for the world. And I want to eventually get to a point where it's build a really big business that did a lot of good for the world. I think it's a little bit of a distinction. I think, you know, in the last couple of years, we've gotten really good at, you know, getting a lot of traffic, making a lot of income. And like, while that's great and everything, you know, one of the downfalls to, you know, not having that personal brand or as strong of a connection with your readers is, you know, you kind of miss out on, like, I don't have coaching clients or anything. Like even if you're still making an impact, you don't see it because you're kind of behind the wall of the brand, which, you know, was our choice to do. But at the same time, you know, it would be nice to, you know, engage with the community a bit more and, you know, really see the impact that we're making. Cause right now it's just less than, you know, if we had taken the more personal approach.
Yeah, that does make sense. I like that idea is just helping more people and like having that written, like created something so then he could then help more people and serve more people. I think that's great. Now, if you were to go and give somebody one bit of advice other than get started, cause everybody says, oh, just get started now, which I agree, just get started. what else should, or advice you would give to somebody that says, you know what, I want to create a website that helps people. What's your advice to give them?
I would say, if you want to eventually leave your job to do it, do not leave your job until you're making significant income from the website. Like, I cannot emphasize enough how stressful that was to leave with nothing coming in, and it negatively impacted like every area of my life for a year. And I don't want to ever go through that again, and I don't want anyone else to go through it because it sucks.
That's a great
tip. I hate to be like, you know, do as I say, not as I do, but really, you want to make sure you have some level of security before you leave your job. And if I could go back and change one thing, I don't know if I could really change it, but I would try to not be so naive.
Awesome. Now, if you're going to go back and give your younger self any advice, could be life, business, or whatever, what would it be?
Study what you want to study in school, if you're going to go to school. I made the mistake of, you know, entrepreneurship never really crossed my mind at all as a kid growing up. It was, you know, I either wanted to be a doctor or like a rocket scientist or, you know, something that just sounded good, that, you know, made a lot of money and made people think I was smart. And, you know, that ultimately like guided my path in undergrad of, you know, I'm studying biochemistry, I hate it, I started skipping class more, you know, I wasn't doing great, graduated with a 2.6, and, you know, just, I was not set. Like, if I would have just like found like what I liked earlier on, or just been open to like, hey, I think marketing is kind of interesting. You know, it's not, you know, as like a young, like a teenager or a college student, you know, marketing is not as like glamorous as like, I'm going to go to med school and be a doctor or like a surgeon or whatever. So just do what you want to do is what I would tell myself.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I liked your statement, if you go to college, because I'm all for, like, I don't think anybody, some people need to go to college, like doctors, mm-hmm. lawyers, but not, it's not for everybody. And especially the debt that you get into, it's just crazy how much people are paying now for college. So
yeah,
go ahead.
I was fortunate enough to, you know, somewhat split the cost with my parents for college. I know some people are completely on their own and some have it all paid for. I was in between, but even still, I mean, that was a big burden just to pay off half of, you know, the cost. And yeah, I don't think I'm completely in the anti-college camp yet, but maybe if I have kids and by the time they're ready for college, you know, I think the world is going to be a lot different. And I don't think college is going to be, you know, the same as it is, like viewed the same way that it is now.
So everybody watching this on YouTube, I'm going to grab something. Hold on. So everybody watching now listening. So here's my diploma. So I literally found this recently inside of a drawer, and it's, can you hear that? It's literally embossed in wood. It's nice. My parents paid, I don't know, a couple hundred bucks for it. It looks really good, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm literally going to blow it up because I will never, ever need it again. I'm absolutely in the camp of, you will never, ever need to go to college if you do so many, like, that's why I have Successfully Unemployed Show, is there so many ways to make money to provide for your family than going to college. But I'm like, I will never use this piece of wood or this piece of paper ever again. I will never, ever have another job. And so I'm going to make a video and then blow it up because I'm just this thing's a waste.
Yeah, I've got a big, sadly, I've got an even more like impressive wood frame for mine. Like, I mean, it's huge. It's like double, it's ridiculous. My mom paid like $200 for the frame. And now it's like a constant reminder that like, there's that biochemistry degree that I slaved away through and never use and got in a lot of debt for. Like, people might see it on the wall as like impressive, and I see it as like a chip on my shoulder, like almost in a weird way, even though it's like not like it.
No, you know what? Something that you wrote in. So as people come on the show for Success Unemployed, I have them write out, you know, talking about their history and stuff. One thing that you touched on that I want to touch on, even though this interview is getting rather long, you talk about humility, and I want to know what's your thoughts about humility, because I personally love humility. I'm a very prideful and arrogant person. And so I really have to work hard at not doing that, because humility is just so much better. What are your thoughts about humility?
I've been told that I overdo it. I think one of my weaknesses is I don't acknowledge how far, like how much we've accomplished, and I kind of downplay it a lot. And I think it's fine to do that, because I mean, no one wants to hear you like brag all day about your successes. But I think also at the same time, I'm quick to like discount how much we've accomplished, and I stay so focused on like trying to reach the next level or, you know, whatever, that I just like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter like how we did last year, like, or, you know, who cares that we have this many readers, like I want double that, or that's not healthy either. So yeah, I think humility is a good thing, but it can be overdone.
Which I get it. Well, if you get self-deprecating, that's what is bad. I think humility is. So humility and everything I've learned about humility, I absolutely love humility. Mm-hmm. Humility is not, let me see if I can get this right and how to say it right. But humility is not thinking less of yourself, like self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. It's thinking of yourself less. Like you don't even think about yourself. You're thinking about the other person. You're mm-hmm. trying to think, how can I help you? How can I benefit you? It's not like self-deprecating where you're putting mm-hmm. yourself down. No, so that's why I love humility, because the more people that I meet that I just say, hey, I'm not important, you're important, tell me about you. Mm-hmm. The more I learn, the more I get to know somebody, the more if somebody comes away like, hey, that was just a nice guy. And I'd rather be looked at as a nice guy than an arrogant. Hey, that guy just, he thinks he knows everything.
And I would also, love to get better about that too. Cause I think, you know, like I said before, it's like when you get in this like business mentality, you almost, it's almost like you figure out how the game works and then you like just try to get better at it, rather than, it's easy to fall into that trap instead of like, well, how can I like really connect with these people and like truly help them? And, you know, you don't all, like, sometimes you can choose between helping people the most and maximizing your profit the most, and they're not the same thing. And I think it's hard to balance, because once you figure out how to maximize your profit, it's easy to neglect the other side. And I think that's something that like I really want to work on, like being more aware of in the future as we like hopefully grow.
That's great, man. Okay, last two questions should be fairly quick. What is one app, one tool, whatever it might be, it could be a piece mm-hmm. of paper and pen. What should we use that you currently use?
A notebook. I have tried to use Asana and Basecamp and all these things. Like, I've got to have a pen and notebook with like a checklist. I make the boxes. Like, that's how I am. And I'm not ashamed of it anymore.
It's so good. You shouldn't be. That's just how I do it.
Every day is a new page and you just do it. And yeah.
There's something so much more fulfilling though about literally putting pen to paper and writing it down. I remember things that I've written many, many years ago, as opposed to things mm-hmm. I typed. I mean, I've typed lots and lots of stuff. The things mm-hmm. that I actually write by hand, it just sticks in your brain. Yeah. So last question is, what is one nonfiction book, could be business, life, whatever it might be, what would you suggest we read?
One book that I read that a lot of people think is like a really cheesy book, but I really enjoyed it, was The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. You know, it's a little woo-woo and over the top at times, but I really like it. I mean, his way of looking at life is very unique. And I love just the way that he just, you know, looks at everything through like just a bigger lens of like what is possible. You know, if you say you want to make $100,000 a year, like, you know, set your goal to make $1 million a year, or if you want to impact this many people, you know, impact 10 times that many people or whatever. And I think, you know, it's a good book. It's worth the read. I probably have like a few more that I could rattle off, but that one, I always come back to that one whenever I'm asked that question.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good, Matt. Jeff, you've given us so much great wisdom. I want to create a site like Dollar Sprout. I think that's a brilliant business. Good for you. Now, if somebody wants to reach out to you and learn more about you, or even just go to dollarsprout.com, how mm-hmm. can they do that?
Yeah. So I don't know how long you have between, you know, recording the podcast and releasing it, but we're in late February now. I think hopefully in the next 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we have our brand new site launched. We've been working on like a redesign, like for like since last summer. It's been like a huge project. I'm so ready to get it out there. But yeah, come to our site in early March. I mean, you can come now. It it'll look good, but it'll look really good in a few weeks. And yeah, if you want to, you know, email me or whatever, I'm just jeff@dollarsprout.com. Yeah. Follow us on Facebook or whatever. I mean, all the same stuff. I don't know. I should have a better answer for this. Yeah. Follow us on social.
There you go. So if you go to dollarsprout.com, you're going to find some great information for finance. Really? I mean, if you go to college, and you step back and go to high school and step back one further and go to elementary school, they never, I'm going to say just about never, teach you financial understanding, financial literacy, or even how to be financially independent. And so dollarsprout.com is a great way to go to just learn about finances. So Jeff, you've given us so much great stuff. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for being here.
Cool. Yeah, thanks.
Today's episode has been brought to you by the Real Estate Wealth Builders membership. That's the membership that I founded, teaching people how to quit their J-O-B by investing in real estate rental properties. Now, Real Estate Wealth Builders is your place to learn how to invest in real estate with 5 different masterclass courses, group coaching with me, and a private student community where we all work together, all the tools and the discounts, all the resources and everything that you need to quit your J-O-B by investing in real estate. Now, I do want to show you how to do this completely for free. If you want to learn about investing in real estate for free, I want to get you my free real estate investing course. Text the word rental to 33777. That's R-E-N-T-A-L to 33777. So you can see how you can quit your job, that J-O-B, by investing in real estate. I'll show you how to find properties, how to use other people's money to buy properties, and how to scale the business to be successfully unemployed, just like I did. Now, did you also know that there are video versions of each and every single episode on the Successfully Unemployed Show? Well, I did record every single one of these for you. I recorded them for you so you will be able to learn from the experts themselves, see what they're doing, see everything that they are talking about on this show visually, and all their examples, all their slides, all their pictures that they even draw. Everything is on there. Go to successfullyunemployed.co/YouTube. Or if you just go to YouTube and type in Successful Unemployed, more than likely you're going to find me. So successfullyunemployed.co/YouTube. And I would truly appreciate it if you subscribe to Successful Unemployed on YouTube and wherever you're listening to this podcast, subscribe to this show so that you can always get every bit of new information on how to quit your J-O-B. Also, if you got anything out of the show, share it with just one person. Share it with just one person so that they can see the light, that it is so much better to not work a job, be successfully unemployed, and be your own boss. All right, guys, this is it for today's show. I will see you next week. See ya.